You've said that Amelia Earhart is a special hero for you. Why?
Well, I'll say more inspiration than hero. And I think she is for a lot of people who fly, because she was one of the early pioneers. She wasn't just one of the first women. She was one of the first people to fly. And there was so much unknown then about flying. You know, she just didn't let the fear and the risk of it slow her down. She was determined to do it. She had a real passion for it. And just her determination, I think, more than her skill and ability, is what really captured my attention.
Now, she disappeared towards the end of her, what she hoped to be, the round-the-world flight in 1937. That's created an enduring mystery, and we'll get into that in your involvement in that in just a minute. But why do you think that is? Why do people still remember her and that last trip that she never completed?
Well, I think, you know, everybody likes a mystery, and it is a mystery. And the timing of when it happened, right at the beginning of the war, and of course there were so many theories and wild stories about her being captured by the Japanese and one thing and another, that it just added more intrigue, I think, to the episode. And I think the fact that until lately there's been absolutely nothing found of the wreckage, debris, anything, you know, it just has lived on. I can't explain it exactly. I think people just like a good mystery.
Now, the official explanation was that she and her navigator ran out of gas and crashed into the sea near Howland Island in the Pacific Ocean, which was she was heading there to refuel her plane. But you've become involved in a group called TIGER, which stands for the International Group for Historic Aircraft Recovery. And it and its leader, Rick Gillespie, believe that she actually managed to land on another island called Nikku Maroro in what's now the Kiribati Islands in the Pacific. Can you tell us a little bit about that? What's the theory behind that?
Well, the theory is that you have to realize that this flight was almost 20 hours long. And when they went missing was, of course, at the very end of the mission, when they should have been landing. So they had been up for about 24 hours at least. And navigating across that distance and that amount of time, any small error in the calculations or in the navigation, in the heading, is going to put you really far off after that much time. The island where we believe they actually did land is due south of Howland Island by about 350 miles. And 350 miles over that length of time is certainly very, very conceivable. So had they headed just slightly south, they could have been quite far south. And at that time, that was a common technique used in navigation, to intentionally head south or north of your target, because navigation was not very precise then. And then when you got there, you knew you were north or south, and you would turn the appropriate direction and fly due north or south until you got to your target. And she did employ that technique often. So that could have been why they were headed south to begin with. And then, like I said, any error in the navigation at all could have put them farther south. It was a cloudy night for a lot of the way, a lot of the nighttime navigation. So Fred wouldn't have had a lot of celestial bodies to use in the navigation, and he would have been limited. And as we know, she did not take all of the communications gear with her that she was supposed to lighten the weight of the aircraft so it could increase the distance. So she didn't have everything she was supposed to have. When she took off, the antenna, the receiving antenna, came off the bottom of the aircraft. We see that in the video of their departure. So she could transmit, but she couldn't receive. So she was getting no input from the various stations that were supposed to help guide them. So all these little things, each one is very, very recoverable, but all together, we think, created this overwhelming problem. And therefore, by all these circumstances, they ended up 350 miles south.
Is there anything else that you know, points the finger at this other island, Niku Maroro, other historical evidence that leads Tiger to believe that that's where she actually landed?
You mean from that time or from present time?
Either.
Well, yes. I guess yes on both. There were several radio transmissions intercepted at the time for about 7 days following their disappearance that all triangulated to that island group. And at the time, they were dismissed as hoaxes because people didn't understand harmonics then and that you could actually intercept a radio transmission several thousand miles away. And once they realized that and went back and looked at those, they found that they could absolutely have been authentic. And some of the information given in some of those radio transmissions really couldn't have been from anyone but them. It would have been information that only they would know and that have the information have all been proven since, such as a shipwreck that was on that island where they did land, where we believe they did land. In one of her transmissions, she said that they were by that ship. So from the time now, it looks like they were giving valid information. And now, over these past 15 years that Tiger has been doing land searches on that island, they have found so many artifacts that are from that time period and would have been on that airplane. And so it's just a compilation of evidence that all adds up to really look like that is where they were.
Apparently, there was also a photograph taken around that time that some people believe indicates that that's where the plane was, at least for a while.
There was a photograph taken by a British physician about 3 months after their disappearance that shows an item sticking out of the water. This is a coral atoll, a coral reef, and it was stuck in one of the crevices of the reef sticking up that looks very much like the Lockheed Electra landing gear. And we've had several forensic experts look at it, photo interpreters, even the government interpreters as well, look at it. And more it looks like that is a landing gear, and it would be exactly where this group believes the aircraft would have ended up and gone off the side of the reef.
Tiger has mounted several expeditions to this island, the most recent one in the summer of 2012. No smoking gun, if you like it, like to call it that, has been found yet, but it's my understanding they're planning to head back. So Tiger feels it's reasonably confident that they know where she actually came down.
Oh, they absolutely do. In low tide, this reef makes a perfect landing strip. And that's another thing about these radio transmissions from 1937 is the way the Electra was configured, the landing gear has to be on dry ground for the radio to work. It can't be in the water. And all of these transmissions came during low tide when the landing gear would have been out of the water. There's quite significant tide there. So when the tide was in, it would be quite deep. So that also led to the validation of those radio transmissions. So the point where they feel the Electra came to rest is exactly where this landing gear in the picture was stuck in the reef crevice.
You know, given the corrosive nature of seawater and a low-lying island, and after all this time, do you think that, assuming that's where they did land, that there's going to be much left to find?
Well, we do, partly because of the shipwreck that was there as well. There are still very large pieces of it, which they did see in this last expedition. And they found pieces of that they believe are from the aircraft skin on the land in these recent expeditions. So those have survived. And anything large, like like the landing gear or like an engine, would definitely still be there.
What exactly needs to be found to prove that that's where Amelia Earhart and Fred Noonan and her navigator wound up?
Something that can be positively tied to that particular aircraft, like an engine or a panel that has a serial number on it, maybe a piece of equipment from inside the aircraft that we know was on that aircraft. Her aircraft was very specifically made for this mission, so it had things on it that a normal Electra would not have had. So any of those parts that could be identified that it was that particular Electra. And if we find the debris field, which in the later research of all the data they did bring back from last summer, it's looking like they did find the debris field. They're fairly confident of that now. And it's all in the exact spot where they felt it would be.
Whether or not Amelia Earhart and Fred Noonan are found on this island or another island, why do you believe that it's important that they be found?
Well, to close out the mystery, for one thing, but it also shows that they really were professionals. They really did know what they were doing. The island has an area on it where it's clear people did survive for a period of time. And they used all of the correct survival techniques that we're taught today. And they were doing things that they were supposed to be doing, trying to signal at the correct times and using tools they had to live with what was there on the island. We saw bottles of creams and lotions, things that we knew they would have taken with them that were broken, and wires fashioned around them to hold over a fire, to boil water, things like that. And it will just validate them as professionals and explorers and, you know, help end this mission. Secretary Clinton said that this adventure embodies the very hope, ingenuity, and boundless optimism of the American spirit. And I think that really does identify who we are, and I think that's why it's important to solve this.
You know, you mentioned that Earhart and Noonan were evidently using accepted navigational practices of the time. If that's true, and they did come down on this island, why would the Navy not have looked there at the time to see if that's where they came down?
Well, they did. President Roosevelt launched the most extensive and expensive search in our history at that time. He sent a carrier out of San Diego to go look, and there were several flights, airborne searches overhead. One of the pilots did note that there were signs of recent habitation on this island, and it was an uninhabited island. But for some reason, no ground search followed that up, and that I don't know. But they did do a carrier and air search of that very area.
You yourself are a navigator. You were a navigator for the Air Force, so would it be fair to say you perhaps not only look up to Earhart, but have a special affinity with her navigator, Fred Noonan?
Well, I certainly do. He was the best in the world. He was Pan Am's chief navigator at the time and founded the first aerial navigation school. He was a ship's navigator before he became an aircraft navigator. So he developed aerial navigation, and he produced all of the charts of the Pacific. So he was the best of the best at the time.
How did you get involved with Tiger? You were not actually on the expedition to the island over the summer, but you were involved at least on the shore, as it were. Is that true?
Yes, that's correct. I've been involved with Tiger for several years. When they first came up with this theory, I liked it. I was interested in it and kept abreast of what they were doing. So I've been donating to their group for a number of years. But I had never done anything hands-on with them before until this opportunity. I've supported Secretary Clinton in many of her efforts since the White House. So So when this came up and she got involved, she and the Secretary of Transportation both jointly announced this expedition. Her staff asked me if I would help make sure it was, you know, organized correctly. We had to raise all private funding. It was completely privately funded. And, of course, organize the press and everything for the events. So I helped with all of that. And, of course, I helped validate the entire theory to see if there was anything substantial here to really go after. So that was my role. I did not take part then on the expedition itself.
Do you think that you will go to the island on a future expedition?
Well, I don't know. They're long trips, for one thing. They're a month long because it's an eight-day journey to get there. There's no way to get there except by boat, and we go out of Hawaii. It's 8 days each way, and then whatever length of time you spend there. So it is quite time-consuming. In addition, Tiger holds training courses and teaches you really how to do archaeological digs and things like that. And those are a couple of weeks long. So perhaps in bits and pieces I could get all of that done. But when one is still working, that's a lot of time to commit.
If a future expedition does find artifacts that can be directly linked to the Earhart flight, where will they end up?
They'll be on permanent display at the Smithsonian, although they will still be owned by the Nation of Kiribati. Currently, they are scheduling another expedition for the summer of 2014, and they don't know yet if this will strictly be a land expedition or if they will also be able to do some underwater, but from what they're finding from the data that they brought back, it is looking more and more like they will be able to incorporate some water search as well because they're finding some pretty promising targets. So that's something to look forward to. And if people go on the website, they can keep abreast of the updates to that trip and other trips that they're doing as well. One of Amelia's quotes that's always been one of my favorites that kind of sums up her whole life, not just this expedition, but adds validity to it. She said, "One must decide whether or not the goal is worth the risks involved. And if it is, stop worrying." I think she carried that attitude through all of her expeditions.